Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello, health junkies. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. And today we are going to talk about, is food allergy testing a scam? So I have a lot of patients in my practice that have chronic digestive issues. They might have some itching. They might have some rashes. They might have a cough. And they're trying to figure out what is causing all this. And oftentimes one of the questions that I get is food allergy testing appropriate for me? Now, there are quite a different varieties of food allergy testing. And before I get into those, I want to talk a little bit about what we're looking at when we actually do food allergy testing. We are looking at two big things, the IgE and the IgG. These are antibodies. IgE antibodies are immediate reactions. These are the ones that your body is going to have a little bit more of an overt, drastic response to, where we might have difficulty breathing, we might have throat swelling, we might have chest pain. These are the ones where you might need some Benadryl or you might need to get an EpiPen out. Now, in the case of IgG, IgG is a delayed reaction. So this type of reaction can happen hours to, so 24 to 72 hours after you eat a particular food. And these are the tricky ones because a lot of times we don't know what's actually causing our symptoms. And so I like to think of food allergy testing more of as a way to detect the extent of our leaky gut and to detect the extent of what our immune system is currently reacting to. I wouldn't actually say that a lot of the allergies that come back as IgG, so the delayed reactions, are true allergies. In fact, they're mostly coming up as the foods that you eat most commonly. And one of the things that I typically will look at in food allergy testing is if someone comes back with a lot of low-level sensitivities, what that means is that particular individual has a very leaky gut. I have a lot of folks that will test their food allergies and we won't get a lot of reactions, and we'll have maybe three or four that are really extreme. And that means, okay, those people have certain really, they've created major reactions to those particular foods. But overall, their gut lining isn't really that bad. So that being said, let's get into talking about the different types of food allergy testing and how I kind of grade it on severity of, say, food allergy or maybe more food sensitivity due to leaky gut. So the first type of test that I'm going to talk about is from a company called Alcat. And this is kind of the gold standard of functional medicine or naturopathic doctor food allergy testing. It is a blood test, and we're looking at the white blood cells. And what we're looking at in this test is, what do the white blood cells do when they're exposed to certain foods? And so if the white blood cells are more active when exposed to, say, peanuts, now we're going to say this is an allergic type of reaction. And we talk about it in terms of gradations between low, moderate, and severe. If the white blood cell severely reacts to a particular food, I'm going to say that that's quite a reaction and someone should avoid that food, if not forever, or perhaps take it out for a year, introduce it, see what the body does. Now, in the cases of the food allergy testing that I do in my office, I often think of these things more as a food sensitivity testing. Unfortunately, I even get into the habit of using allergy and sensitivity kind of back and forth interchangeably, and I shouldn't really do that. Unfortunately, it happens. And if you do have a white blood cell reaction to a particular food, that's a pretty big deal. And with the ALCAT testing, white blood cell reactions are kind of your gold standard. They're kind of your, you know that there's an issue going on. Whereas the other type of food sensitivity testing is called agglutination testing. And these are the ones where we draw blood and the blood's sent off to the lab. And what the lab will do is drop little droplets of the blood into little wells. And then we've got food combining. So they'll drop little droplets of food with those blood samples and see if the blood coagulates. If the blood coagulates, we consider that a reaction. So in the cases of companies such as US Biotech or Genova, those types of tests are agglutination-based tests. They're not white blood cell, but they're agglutination. And these are great for food sensitivity testing. I typically like to look at the white blood cell testing to determine if someone really does have a picture of a more severe food allergy. Now, there's another type of test called a blood spot test. This is one that we commonly use for kids or for adults that don't like blood draws. We'll poke the skin with a little lancet, put the blood spots onto a card, and that card is then used to test for food sensitivities. Now, that one is also going to be much like the agglutination test and much more reliable for food sensitivities and the extent of someone's leaky gut. I use the blood spot mostly in kids, to be honest. I do prefer to use the white blood cell testing because I see it as more accurate in terms of what are we working about or working with in this case. Now, conventional allergists use a skin prick test, and this is more the case in terms of if something is an immediate reaction, the IgE. I typically will recommend folks get skin testing if they suspect that their cause of throat swelling, difficulty breathing, all of those types of things, those are some more serious reactions, and I want to see a skin prick test in that case. And so oftentimes I will have folks go towards that because that is going to give you a lot more of the immediate reaction on the skin level of a food allergy. Whereas the agglutination and the blood spot types of testing and some of the white blood cell testing can also be more on the lines of food sensitivity. Okay, so that being said, how do you interpret these results and kind of how do you go about it? So I've already mentioned the IgG being the delayed response and the IgE being an immediate response. I also kind of mentioned that if I notice that someone has a low level allergy to a lot of foods, I'm commonly going to say they've got leaky gut and these foods that they commonly eat are going to be on there because they eat them most commonly. That being said, if you're going to do food allergy testing, you definitely want to make sure you're not avoiding any foods, because if you're avoiding those foods, they're not going to be active in terms of getting across the gut lining into the bloodstream to show that you're creating an immune system reaction to them. So keep that in mind. Now, if we have an allergy to foods that we hardly ever eat or never eat, a lot of times I'll see that in terms of low-level allergies. I typically interpret these as these could be foods that you ate while you had another type of irritating food in the diet at that point, and that particular irritated gut allowed for that molecule along with the food that you actually are sensitive to get into the bloodstream and cause an issue. Now, these could also be true allergies because a lot of people don't eat certain foods because they don't feel good with them. And perhaps they've noticed that, or they haven't noticed that and they just don't eat certain foods just because, and it could just be a coincidence or it could be a true allergy. Now, in the terms of yeast, if I see yeast being positive on a food sensitivity test, and this means yeast in terms of the form of candida, this is pretty indicative that this person has a leaky gut and the yeast is getting into the bloodstream, causing a systemic reaction. They might also have brain fog, fatigue, nasal congestion, other issues that would be indicative of a yeast infection, or skin rashes that are yeast-like. Tinea versicolor, these are white spots on the skin. That is a apparent yeast infection. Also under the breasts, in areas where we have a little bit more friction or sweat, you can see red spots that are itchy. And these are kind of plaque-like looking spots. They're stuck to the skin. That is definitely a yeast type of reaction. And that yeast got across from the digestive system into the blood. Okay, if we see wheat or gluten positive, I oftentimes will add on celiac testing because I do want to know if someone has a true celiac type of condition, especially if we have chronic gut issues. And I mean, in particular, bloody diarrhea, things of that nature. There is a test that you can do with Genova called tissue transglutaminase. You can also do this on conventional labs like LabCorp, and this is a blood test. You have to be eating gluten to get an accurate response, though. So keep that in mind. Now, molds on foods can also show up in the food sensitivity testing. And oftentimes, I suspect that folks are eating irritating foods that have molds on them, or the molds cause the gut irritation. So now the food is causing an issue for this individual. So, for example, tomatoes. We get a lot of mold that grows on tomatoes. We get a lot of molds that grow on strawberries. Someone might have a particular black mold that grows on strawberries that shows up in their food allergy testing, and it also shows up as they have a sensitivity to strawberry. And so here's me, I just did it right now, used interchangeably food sensitivity and allergy, I apologize. So oftentimes if someone has a sensitivity to a mold, that it's a food type of mold, oftentimes they're gonna have a sensitivity to that same food that mold grows on. So tomato issue, tomato mold. Corn mold, corn issue. Strawberry mold, strawberry issue. So something to keep in mind. A lot of times we'll see environmental mold show up in food sensitivity testing, because I do environmental sensitivity testings with the food sensitivity testing. So it's a combined test. And in Genova in particular, they will do that. And the white blood cell testing, the ALCAT testing, there is a component of looking at environmental mold. The reason we can see environmental mold is because we inhale those spores and we can tell if we have a reaction. Now, there is some argument as to if that's also a leaky gut type of manifestation, which I would say absolutely it is, because we inhale environmental mold. And if we have a leaky gut, so spaces between our gut lining, we're going to see that spore, that mold show up in our bloodstream, and we're going to have an immune system reaction to it. So it makes sense. Now, if I see someone that has minimal food allergies and a lot of mold allergies off the charts, I'm going to be having them look at their home and figure out what's going on in their home or work environment, because a lot of food sensitivity type of reactions, itching, rashes, congestion, headaches, could be because of environmental mold. So keep that in mind, especially if you live in a moldy environment, much like the Pacific Northwest where I live. So another thing that the white blood cell ALCAT testing can do is it looks at herbs, it looks at functional foods, so some of our superfoods like moringa and acai berry, and so superfoods of that nature, preservatives in foods, BHT, things of that nature, sodium benzoate. It also looks at medications. And so that's what I do like about the white blood cell food sensitivity testing, is that it's expanded to herbs and spices and medicinal herbs, in addition to some of our functional superfoods, our preservatives and medications out there. So I kind of like that. And that's why I see the white blood cell testing as one of the best on the market. In addition to the case that they have over 200 foods that they can test in some of the advanced packages of testing. And you're looking at about $600 for testing. I think it's $610 to get all of the environmentals, the foods, the spices, the medications, and the preservatives tested. But I think it's well worth its weight in gold when you are struggling with food sensitivities and skin reactions, and it's ruining your life. Now, the next thing is, once we've determined what you're sensitive to, is how to manage the food sensitivities and the suspected allergens and what to do. If I have someone in the severe category, oftentimes I have them avoiding those foods for at least a year. And then we slowly introduce the foods, and we introduce one food at a time, and we watch every 72 hours. So say you're introducing wheat again after a year, I have you eat something that's pure wheat, which would be like cream of wheat, and you eat a half a cup of cream of wheat, and literally that's what you eat in wheat, nothing else that day with wheat, and you see what happens in 24, 48, 72 hours. And if nothing happens in those 72 hours, then I have you eat a little bit more, and we kind of see how you do in that department. And the same thing goes with reintroducing all the other foods. Now, if you have a low level reaction to foods, I typically rotate those foods, because unfortunately in society, we get in food ruts and we'll eat the same thing day in, day out for a week till it's gone and we go to the grocery store again. Or if you're like a lot of Americans, you have the same 14 dinners that you rotate, like Monday's pizza night, Tuesday's taco night, and you rotate that all the time, and you get exposed to the same foods day in, day out. And you know, that is not the best way to eat. We should be rotating up our foods. And so I highly, highly recommend that if you have low-level allergens, you're just eating that particular low-level food every 3 to 4 days. Now, in terms of some of the mild to moderate reactions, depending on what someone tells me about that food, if they typically were consuming it day in, day out, I will actually take that food out for about 3 months, and then we reintroduce the food. The idea here is not that I like being evil. It's more that we need to just calm the immune system reaction. So let the body not be as hypersensitive. And so same thing goes here for avoiding something for 3 months. Then we have a portion of that food after the 3 months, and we watch for symptoms for 72 hours to see if anything happens. And if nothing happens, then you can go and eat a little bit more of that food and see how you do. The big overarching component here in terms of all of this is that if you come up with a sensitivity to any of these foods, the idea is that you never want to go nuts again with that food, going like day in, day out. So for example, if you have a sensitivity to corn and you love tortilla chips, you love nachos, you don't want to ever go back to like every single night you've got tortilla chips or chips and salsa or chips and guac. You want to keep in mind that maybe once a week's great. Same thing with popcorn. You don't want to be having nachos one night, popcorn the next, tacos with corn tortillas the next night. You want to be rotating things so that you're not getting your body hypersensitive in that case. Now, what is the big connection between this gut lining irritation, the leaky gut, and all these food sensitivities? I've kind of alluded already that we have irritations coming from foods that we either overeat, foods we can't digest, or foods that are loaded with pesticides and genetically modified components, because our body doesn't know what to do with that food. I call them frankenfoods. There's also frankenfoods in terms of chemical types of base foods, foods that literally aren't food anymore because there's so many chemicals in there, and maybe there's a hint of wheat flour. Preservatives are a big problem. Processed foods of any kind. Frozen foods have a ton of different chemicals in them. Same with I'm not meaning frozen veggies. I'm meaning frozen like lean cuisines and things of that nature. Anything that comes in a box or a bag that is in a form that doesn't come in nature, you want to question what's that going to do to your gut. Not to rip on Doritos, but I mean there's a lot of ingredients in there, and who knows what it does to your gut and all the different artificial colors and flavors. So keep that in mind. The more ingredients in a food, the more it's going to be irritating to your gut. And what happens is our gut lining receptors don't know what to do with those foods. So it just sits there and it causes holes in the lining. And each time you eat, it's almost like you're ripping off a Band-Aid or ripping off a scab, because you're going to keep making that leaky gut worse. And you keep eating these foods, and now we just keep having the same reaction happening over and over again. And so you're kind of boring holes or ripping off scabs, if you want to think of it, each time you eat these foods that are frankenfoods. And then you end up getting all these molecules of chemicals and whatnot into the bloodstream that your body does not know what to do with it. And then we end up with a lot of inflammation overall, joint pain, thyroid issues, skin issues, and sinus issues. Now, we do have some foods that are considered healthy that cause issues. Lectins, and these guys, lectins are on beans, they're on nuts, and so that's why it's highly recommended to sprout beans and nuts before you eat them, or pressure cook the beans. And some of our grains too, quinoa in particular, it's super healthy, but it's hard to digest. And a lot of times what I'll see in these food sensitivity tests, I'll see that folks have an allergy to pretty much every stinking grain and every stinking bean. And if I see that, that means to me lectin issue. They need to make sure that they are really either pressure cooking their beans and grains, or they're sprouting them before consuming, and sprouting nuts and seeds before they're consuming them to reduce the lectin load. Now, nightshades are a biggie. In American culture, we use tomatoes for a lot of different things, in particular peppers as well, spicy peppers, paprika, black pepper. These are very common things. And this can be a big issue because most of them are genetically modified because they're difficult to grow, or they have parasites that like to grow on them. So you need to have the pesticides on there, and that can be a big issue. And so a lot of times I will see folks over and over again having allergies to tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, things of that nature. The other big outliers but are common is I will see mushroom allergies. And I'll also see allergies to green beans, alfalfa, and amaranth. Amaranth is a grain that a lot of people don't even eat. But one of the big issues with amaranth is the lectins on the outside of it, making it a little bit harder to digest. And lectins are proteins. They protect the plant. And, well, we're kind of eating that plant. And so this is one of the plant's ways of protecting its survival of its progeny. And so in this case, if we are consuming it, it's going to irritate us so that that seed or that bean or whatnot can live on, and we poop it out and then it grows a new plant. So something to keep in mind of why these things cause issues for us. Alfalfa in and of itself is just hard to digest. Mushrooms, for some people, there are components in mushrooms, proteins that are irritating. Green beans are part of the bean family. And then the other one I was mentioning was amaranth, and I already talked about that. So we're good. All right. So another big issue that we have in our society is that we do not chew our foods. The average American chews 7 times and swallows. We should be chewing between 20 and 25 times per bite because our teeth are there for a reason. We need to help our digestive system break down foods. And so not chewing foods and then multitasking while eating is a nightmare for your digestive system. You really need to focus on eating properly and chewing to help your digestive system. That will help you to prevent getting food sensitivities. Also, most of us lack hydrochloric acid, otherwise known as stomach acid. This is an issue for a lot of people because our food will sit in the stomach. We won't get it moving through. And then when it does move through, then we end up with constipation. And that's a big problem. A lot of us also have lacking enzymes to break down the food. So our pancreas isn't working like it should to kick out amylase, which breaks down carbohydrates, or lipase, which breaks down fat, or any of our peptidases that break down our protein. And so think of if someone has a lot of low level of food sensitivities. For me, it's yes, they have leaky gut, but I'm also going, we need to optimize your digestion and get a digestive enzyme that perhaps has a little bit of hydrochloric and enzymes to help you out. Or that's why drinking water with lemon and apple cider vinegar is so important and so effective for a lot of people, because it's priming the digestive system to help you to break down foods. Plus, it's warming your digestive system. Anything that is warming and a little acidic is like giving a little fuel. It's like stoking the fire for you to be able to eat. And it's important because a lot of us will go out to eat and drink ice cold water, which you know what happens if you put ice on your skin. So think about the same thing's going to happen in your stomach. And that really declines the amount of hydrochloric acid that you can produce. So your stomach acid that you produce and your enzymes. And it messes with signaling. So stop ice water, drink warm water or sip room temperature water when you're eating. Don't guzzle, because if you guzzle a whole bunch of water while eating, you're going to dilute all your enzymes anyway. So typically I have folks doing the whole thing of the concept of the small little cups, the ones that you get at the Chinese and the Japanese restaurants of tea. They're not big mugs like American sized things. These are tiny little ones. And the reason being is because it's helping to prevent you from diluting your enzymes so much to the point that you can't digest anymore. So keep that in mind. Another big issue that we have and why we might have a high level of food sensitivities is that we're not getting in enough fiber or antioxidants in our diet. And what this means is the fiber and antioxidants help to either push things through the diet, the digestive system, and the antioxidants clear inflammation. Antioxidants come in the form of fruits and veggies. And I don't mean raw fruits and veggies. I mean sauteing them lightly, keeping them room temperature, thinking about digestive health overall. They have fiber in them. They just help to move things through the gut and de-inflame the gut. And I can't recommend that enough for my folks with food sensitivities. So today we've talked about food allergy, food sensitivity testing, and is it a scam? And to be honest with you, I really, really highly recommend doing food sensitivity testing, no matter what, if you've got some gut issues, to try to figure out if there are foods that could be blocking your progress in healing your digestive system. If you have issues that are more as of an emergency type of situation where your throat's swelling, you're having difficulty breathing, you've had to use an EpiPen or you've been to the ER, skin prick testing, start with that, then move into the food sensitivity testing. I do highly recommend the white blood cell testing because I believe in accuracy in that component, and I get better results from the white blood cell test versus the Genova and the US Biotech. Not that I think that they're bad tests. It's just that if you're going for most accurate testing, you want to do the most accurate lab out there. And agglutination just isn't as good as the white blood cell testing in my book. Plus, the white blood cell testing tests over 200 foods, and it just gives us a much better picture in terms of herbs and spices and functional foods too. So that's my spiel on the food sensitivity testing. Now, I have some resources for you at the end of my show notes that will give you all the scoop on the blood spot testing versus food sensitivity testing, the white blood cell type and the Genova type, and feel free to check it out and see what you think. I'd love to hear your feedback as to if you've had this type of testing before, what you thought, if you avoided the foods and felt better. One of the big things to keep in mind is that your digestive system is not just all about the reaction right on the gut and the food sensitivities. It's about functional problems as well. And that's why I mentioned the hydrochloric acid, so stomach acid, and helping with de-inflaming the gut. There's a lot more to it. And I highly, highly recommend that if you're going to do the food sensitivity testing, you also get a functional medicine doc or a naturopath on board to help you with troubleshooting, because these food sensitivity tests are great, but a lot of times they're not the whole picture of what's going on. So that's it for today's show. I'm Dr. Janine Krause. This is another episode of The Health Fix. Thank you for listening. Thanks for tuning into The Health Fix, the podcast all about taking control of your health, rebelling against aging, and having fun every day. A lot of patients ask me, do you think I'm aging too fast? So I created an evaluation checklist for you to see for yourself. Plus, I created a resource guide to help you slow down the aging process right now. You can find it for free on my website, drjkrausend.com. If you like this podcast, help get the word out to others by liking it and rating it. If you'd like more natural health tips and want to join our Facebook community where I interact daily, click on the join group button on our website at drjkrausend.com.